G'day, and welcome to the Sea Creatures Podcast, a show all about the amazing animals that live beneath the waves. Each episode, we chat about a specific sea creature with a guest who has spent time and interacted with this ocean animal. Our guests range from marine biologists, underwater photographers, citizen scientists, artists, scuba divers, and anyone with an intense passion for marine life. My name is Matt Testoni, and I'm all of the above. And joining me for this episode of the Sea Creatures Podcast is Rachel Brooks, and she's a wildlife artist. And we're going to be talking all about basking sharks. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No worries. So, basking sharks, before we delve into them, start us off telling us how you became kind of interested in sharks and basking sharks and where your knowledge of them and passion for them began.
Yeah, so I'm a wildlife artist now, but my background is in zoology. And before I came back to the UK, I was living overseas working in the scuba industry as an instructor. So I was fortunate enough to work in Australia, Indonesia, Malaysia. So I loved sharks. I worked with whale sharks in the Ningaloo for a little while and seen sharks dive in all over the world. But I'd never really thought about sharks in the UK. And during that time, people would say, oh, you live in the UK, you're from Scotland. Have you seen a basking shark? And I'd actually not heard of basking sharks before I moved to the other side of the world. And that's probably the case for most people in the UK. They're a relatively unknown species of shark. Unless you're in the sharky world, most people don't really know what they are, even though we're so lucky to have them here on the coast in Scotland. So it was a long journey to discover basking sharks. But after living overseas for all that time, I came back to the UK and I became operations manager at a company called Basking Shark Scotland. And I ended up working with them for 3 years in the Hebrides.
Cool. And I just have to ask, you knew what basking sharks were before you started as the operations manager, I think?
Yes. Yeah. So as soon as somebody told me about basking sharks, I was like, I have to know what these things are. They sound insane. Found this company on Facebook, followed them for years, and I was like, I'm going to work there. That looks really cool. So yeah, when I came home, the opportunity kind of arose at the same time, and I applied and was lucky enough to get the job.
Cool. And I actually really want to ask so many questions about that kind of job, and I'm sure everyone wants to know what that kind of job is. But before we delve into that, set the scene for us with what exactly a basking shark is, because they're pretty weird sharks, right?
Yeah, they are a little unusual. So the basking shark is the second largest species of shark and fish in the world. And so they grow up to 12 meters, which you might think, if a 12 meter shark is swimming off the coast, how have we not really seen or heard about them? But they're one of three plankton eating shark species. So they are similar in feeding to a whale shark, but they are the only one that does filter feeding passively. So basically, they are the laziest of feeding techniques in all the shark species. They have this really unusual look. So when you see them on the surface, which is when they are feeding, you might actually see this big white open mouth through the surface of the water. And that's how most people imagine the basking shark, because we pretty much only see them when they're feeding. And their mouths can be about a meter wide, and you can see these huge, huge mouths moving through the water, and they're sieving through all the plankton. But if they close their mouth, they actually look more similar to a great white shark. So they're more closely related to the great whites than they are to other filter feeding sharks, and they're in the same mackerel shark order. So they have this quite great white silhouette. And then they have this huge mouth that opens and completely changes how they look. They're very, very cool. If you've not seen a basking shark before, do have a little look at what they look like.
Yeah, I mean, that their mouths open is such an iconic look. But yeah. To think they look like a great white when their mouth is closed and they're 12 meters, that would be, that's got to be a bit intimidating when you see them in the wild for the first time.
For sure. And it's very cool seeing them with their mouths closed in the water because it's not a usual sight. And it just changes their whole silhouette to quite a sleek look. Whereas when they've got this 1 meter wide open mouth, they look very triangular almost. And their name in different languages, in some places they're called bone sharks because of that look of the open mouth. If you look, it looks almost like you're seeing a rib cage. But you've got like the inside of the gill rakers is what you're seeing. So when they're filtering through, it's where all the food comes from.
Yeah. And you mentioned that they're passive feeders, whereas animals like whale sharks, which also eat very similar food, aren't passive. Like, what's the difference between the two and their feeding?
Yeah, so if a whale shark is filter feeding, they are actually sucking in the water around them. And so if you imagine a hoover sucking in everything, and it's quite broad, you're going to get in whatever is around you, and they'll hoover up all the plankton, whereas a basking shark will literally just swim with its mouth open through the water, and whatever it passes is what it gets, basically, which seems very untargeted, but actually studies have found that their feeding is actually really targeted, and that they're seeking out areas where they've got the highest density of plankton, and even areas where the plankton, individual plankton, is bigger. So it seems like they're just aimlessly swimming around with their mouths open, but they're actually honing in on these plankton hotspots. And they do that because they have a really well-developed sense of smell.
So they smell the plankton from far away, is that right?
That's what we think. And so the plankton that they're targeting is a very specific type of calanoid copepod, which is a very, very, very small thing for such a big shark to be eating. So they have to eat a lot of them to get through their day. And they have a little fatty, oily body, basically. And they think that the sharks can smell that. So in some areas where you see lots of calanoid copepods, it creates a little oil slick on the surface from those secretions. And so basking sharks have a really, if you look at them again, they have quite a big nose, a big, like, round, bulbous nose. And that's covered in these tiny pores, which can detect movement in the water. But also most of their brain mass is dedicated to their sense of smell. So we think that must be quite an important way of how they're feeding.
Yeah. And so because they're smelling their prey, does that mean that you'll end up with multiple basking sharks or even other animals kind of all coming in? And is it quite crazy, or is it more of a one-on-one experience when you see them?
Yeah, it's not quite, you know, like Sardine Run crazy where there's basking sharks all diving into the same plankton bloom. So we tend to see them either solitary or in quite small groups. And you do see larger aggregations at some places, but we think that might be more courtship related than feeding related. Usually, if you see a shark feeding, it might be on its own or with another one, and they can go in trains feeding. And we think that they're kind of using the movement of each other there to help them feed. And they will most likely be swimming against a very strong current, and that will be pushing all the plankton right into their mouths as they go. So typically where we're looking for them, there's not much else feeding on the plankton, but the things that are feeding on the plankton are then fed on by other things. So we're based in the Hebrides, so you might see minke whales and dolphins feeding nearby on the fish and diving gannets and all that. But you'll find the basking sharks tend to steer away from all the action.
But it sounds like they're kind of like cyclists, and you know, when they're going on a race, five. How many did you get in a train? What's the most you've seen?
Oh, I've seen three in a train together, which was probably the three biggest ones I've ever seen, and they were all about 10 meters. So it was like a train passing you by, carriage by carriage. But they have seen some really amazing sightings recently of basking sharks in what has been dubbed a Taurus. So I prefer the term Sharknado, which might give you a bit of a more visual of what that might be. And it's essentially hundreds of basking sharks together in one circular movement. And they think that what they're doing there is checking each other out. So they call it speed dating for basking sharks. And as they're swimming around in this group, they're quickly having a little eye over each one. And that starts at the surface and goes right down to the depths. And then we have no idea what happens at the bottom, basically. It's one of the many mysteries about basking sharks that we are yet to unfold. But yeah, you can see them alone, or you can see these huge aggregations, which is a really special thing to see.
Yeah, wow. And I have to ask, this is a question a little bit from before, but what happens when they've got their mouth open and something that they don't want to eat gets in there? How do they get it out? Or I've always wondered that with basking sharks.
Yeah, so when you're watching a shark feed in the water, where we are in Scotland, there is so many jellyfish at the same time. So we get loads of big lion's mane jellyfish and moon jellyfish, and they never seem to swallow them. They actively avoid them. So I don't know if it's something they've learned through experience to be quite unpleasant, or if that way that they're detecting movement in the water, that they can sense that the jellyfish is too big for them to sieve through their gill rakers, so they're avoiding it. I have seen whale sharks cough up fish that were too big for them to swallow, but again, they're feeding so differently, they're just sucking everything in, which was quite an unusual thing to see. It was almost like it coughed up a big fish. But I've never seen a basking shark do that. I've always seen them steer away from those things. They are feeding much, much slower than the whale shark does, though.
Yeah, okay. So I guess that kind of answers my next question, which is obviously, like, they're not going to swallow you, but is that, I mean, like, people must ask you that all the time. Like, what happens if one gets too close? Does it feel like they're going to, or are you, is it always like a really calm and chill experience when you see
Yeah,
them?
So when we talk about sharks, we always talk about how highly developed their senses are. They've got this lateral line that can sense changes in the water around them. They've got extra senses to us, basically. They're so aware of their environment. And then you've got the basking shark, and I swear there's been moments where it just looks like it could swim straight into the boat without noticing. They're so zoned in on the plankton that they just seem totally unaware of everything else around them. It's very rare that they even look or acknowledge that you're in the water with them, which is exactly what we want when we're observing an animal. We don't want to be disturbing it. But yeah, they will leave it to the very last second to change direction sometimes. So you've got a very large 1 meter wide mouth coming right towards you, and then they'll almost realize, oh, and just steer away. So they're always steering away from you, but you know, you're very much a small fish in their eyes when they can grow up to 12 meters.
Yeah, wow. And so when you see them, you're snorkeling or you're diving, or like, talk us through, you head out on a boat to see a basking shark, and like, what's it like and how does it go?
Yeah, so when we talked about basking sharks before, we mentioned that they were feeding on plankton. And so the best way to find them is while they're doing that at the surface. So the ideal dream scenario of searching for a basking shark is that you've got big plankton bloom on the surface and the sharks are feeding, because if they're not at the surface, you're not going to find them. So they're in a huge, huge area out in the open ocean. Most of the time, they do come in closer to shore if the plankton is there. So you're very much at mercy of what the weather is doing, because that dictates the plankton and the tides and the sea conditions. And in Scotland, that can be very variable. So on a dream day, it's nice and calm. You can see for miles and you spot a very large triangular fin at the surface. It moves differently to dolphins and whales. So if you see those at the surface, they're going up and down. Whereas if you see a basking shark at the surface, it's going side to side. And sometimes you can see their tail fin out of the water as well. And if they're feeding very shallow in the water, you can sometimes see their nose poking out of the water too. So you have three little points moving across the surface, just going side to side, honing in on the plankton. And what we would do then is just watch the shark for a little while, if it's feeding, if it's quite steady, if it's staying there and just doing its thing, then we will, in very small groups, just drop into the water and just watch it swim by, which is just such an incredible experience, you know, sharing the water with something so big. And for me, it's special to have experiences like that here in Scotland, because, you know, I said I traveled all over the world for experiences like that and never realized you could do this sort of stuff here, and it's just really special.
Yeah, wow. Whenever I like talk to people about animals overseas, I always get so excited and have to add it to the bucket list of places to visit for diving. And yeah, you wouldn't think Scotland would be the place to see a 12-meter shark, which, yeah, that's pretty amazing. But so you also mentioned you worked as like an operations manager for a basking shark tourism company. What's that like? Or yeah, how does that go? I imagine it's not all snorkeling with basking sharks.
It's unfortunately not all snorkeling with basking sharks, no. So I did that for 3 years, and we get basking sharks here in the summer. So the peak season for seeing sharks is July, August, and there is a shoulder season around that. And then through the winter, we don't really see any sharks, and we also don't really see much sunlight or sunshine or anything that would make you want to go out on a boat. So the winter months were kind of all planning and admin and preparing for the next season and going through data and things like that. So we did more of like a citizen science data collection project when we saw sharks. So the winter months were for all the office-based things, which is, again, when I would start to focus on my artwork to keep me going till the next summer. And then spring comes along and things start to come back to our waters. So around April time, you get a lot of the seabirds migrating back here. So we get puffins and gannets and all sorts of Manx shearwaters, and then the whales appear and it all just kind of erupts at once, and the Sea of the Hebrides just comes to life for that few months in the middle of the year.
Cool. You mentioned citizen science. What kind of like information are you gathering, or what are some cool results, or what are things like they're hoping to find from like citizen science projects on basking sharks?
We don't know very much about basking sharks at all, is the short answer. So we're looking for everything, and we want to know more about the population size and what they're doing in the Hebrides, where they're going afterwards is such a big question. So while they're in our waters and in such concentrated numbers, we try and take as much data as possible. So we've been looking if they were male or female sharks, the size of the shark, because they've got a really long life history, which means they take a really long time to get to those sizes. So it gives us a bit of an indication of how old the shark is. If they have any parasites, so sometimes we see basking sharks with parasitic lampreys, and I won't get too much into lampreys, but they look like something out of a horror movie. if you have a little look at those. And the reason we're interested in those is because we want to know where they're coming across lampreys in the first place. So you don't often see lampreys free swimming out into the middle of the Atlantic. So there must be some part of their life where they're crossing paths, which is the interest in that. We're looking if there's any scarring, all sorts of different things to build up a profile of individual sharks, which will then hopefully help us determine how many there are in our area. So we were creating over the past few years what we call shark passports, and we were taking DNA swabs from the sharks. They were being sent off, and then it builds together a picture of the population of sharks in the Hebrides. So basking sharks particularly are very slimy. So we just had a little swab and rubbed it on our dorsal fin, and we had a fridge full of shark slime. So that's all been sent off for testing. And yeah, so that's a little bit about what we were looking at. But there's all sorts of different research going into basking sharks, and especially in the past few years, it's really interesting what sorts of pieces of the puzzle are starting to form. But they are a very mysterious species.
Yeah, and what's their conservation status? Are they endangered, or are there different populations that are more affected?
Yeah, so basking sharks are endangered, and the population here is the Northeast Atlantic. They suffered a lot from hunting. So there's been basking shark fisheries pretty much since early whaling times in like Scandinavia, Norway, Iceland, where there was sharks there, and they would use similar techniques to how they were whaling with harpoons. And there were also very established shark fisheries in Scotland and Ireland. So these are the areas where the biggest populations of basking sharks were historically. So you do get basking sharks across the world in temperate seas. One of the most notable places, again, would have been Canada, North America, and they've almost been exterminated from that coast from fishing practices. In fact, theirs was probably the worst. They called out for an eradication of basking sharks because they were getting stuck in fishing nets. So we talked about basking sharks swimming on the surface looking for plankton, and I said they can seem a little bit unaware. You can imagine a basking shark quite easily getting entangled. So unfortunately, because of that, the government put a bounty on basking sharks, and they went out and got rid of them. And they have unfortunately not really returned to those waters at all. In Scotland, we had our last shark fishery close in 1995, and we are still seeing the recovery from that time. So it was estimated that over 100,000 basking sharks were taken out of the population from hunting, and that's just from what was recorded. And the shark fisheries in Ireland and Scotland were very boom-bust industries, and so they would have very successful years followed by years of not really landing any sharks. And then the Norwegians came over, and they had much better technology and did, in their terms, a better job, but really pushed the population there to the brink, unfortunately. So yeah, they are endangered, and there's no targeted fisheries for them in the world anymore. They're protected in Scotland. They recently gained protection in Ireland just 2 years ago. So now it's illegal to intentionally kill, harm, or harass sharks in Irish and British waters. It's illegal to land them anywhere in EU waters. So they are afforded quite a measure of protections, but there's things that we can't, unfortunately, offer them much protection against. And that's things like climate change, because they're plankton eaters. They're very affected by changes in the climate and bycatch, unfortunately, entanglement, ship strikes. So they still have a lot to contend with. And as I mentioned, they're here in the summer months, and we've just established the first marine protected area for basking sharks in the world, which is great, but they only spend a very small amount of their time here in that MPA. The rest of the year, they could be right across the Atlantic, down in the Mediterranean, and there's a lot of open water there for them to survive, basically. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we don't know too much about them as well, is because their numbers have declined so drastically.
So we don't know much about them, and the population is quite low. But what kind of population numbers are we talking about? Are we talking a couple of hundred sharks? Are we talking a couple of thousand? Or we still just don't know?
Yeah, so in terms of population numbers, it's one of the questions that people are trying to answer, but we think it's in the low tens of thousands. The population that's probably most studied is the one in the Atlantic, and that's what most things are based off. As I mentioned, you do get them in other parts of the world in temperate waters. Like, you'll see them in New Zealand, Japan, and other places as well, but not really in large numbers.
Yeah, and what kind of recovery do they have? Because you mentioned they have a bit of a boom and bust industry of them. Does that mean that they can recover quickly from large numbers losses, or are they more like some other species that really struggle to get their numbers back up?
Yeah, so it'll be a long time for them to recover to the numbers that they were historically. So there's historic records of sharks in the Hebrides that describe them as stepping stones across the sea. And you just can't imagine looking out and seeing hundreds of basking sharks across the horizon, basically. But that would have been a common sight at one point during the summer here. And now you might spend your whole day looking for one, if you're lucky, and you might not see any for, I know, like the last few years have been a bit low in numbers of sightings. So it's definitely something that's going to take a long time to rebuild. And genetic studies have shown that groups of sharks together are actually quite closely related. So if they were hunting sharks and taking a lot out of the same groups, you're basically really reducing the genetic diversity within the remaining population. So there's been a lot of damage done, and it will take a long time for them to recover from that. We don't know where they're breeding, and we don't know where they're pupping. So that's two big questions that are still unknown. And the fact that we don't know where it's happening means we can't protect it. But it's also one of those really cool mysteries still about basking sharks, that they have this secret life that we don't really know much about, which I think is probably an advantage to them as well.
Yeah, I love a good like marine mystery. And you mentioned lampreys and how they get lampreys on them.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you find lampreys? Or is that part of the puzzle, like that can help, or part of the piece that can help us solve the puzzle?
So I might be wrong, but I believe that lampreys spawn in freshwater. Don't quote me on that. But I think that's why it's a bit of a puzzle, because where do they come then into contact with basking sharks? So we do get basking sharks in sea lochs here. So if you're not from Scotland, it's essentially a river, but we have to call them something different. So we do see them in the lochs. And yeah, you never like just see a lamprey just swimming through the open ocean. I think that's where it's the confusion is. But so we were working with lots of different universities, and one of them was just specifically studying the parasite attachment. They wanted to know like how many there were, where they were attached on the shark, and we think that they might target certain areas. You often see them around the bottom of the shark, around the reproductive organs, and they can actually disguise themselves quite well as claspers. So it can make IDing a shark quite tricky.
And if anyone doesn't know what claspers are, tell us what claspers are.
So claspers are the male reproductive organs of a shark, and they're named claspers because they clasp. So shark reproduction isn't very romantic at all, and that could be a whole other podcast. It's quite intense, especially for the females. The male will clasp on, and they usually bite on as well. So that's when we're looking for scarring as well with the sharks. That could be an indication that there's been courtship.
Yeah, and is that because I was reading a little bit about their teeth? Their teeth aren't really functional because they're filter feeders.
Yeah.
But is that why they still have these teeth, because of their reproductive strategies?
We do think that's one of the reasons they still have teeth. So they don't look like they have teeth. If you look at photos, they look quite gummy almost. But if you look closely, they actually have hundreds of tiny, tiny teeth. And that could be one of the reasons that they do. So they don't use them for feeding, but it could be reproductive.
Yeah. And I just have to ask, I love these kind of mystery questions, but what is your theory, or what is the best current guess of where they go when they're not in Scotland feeding on the plankton in the shallows?
Yeah, so when they leave our waters, we know that they do different things. So there is no one flat answer for what all of the basking sharks do. Some of them definitely stay in Scottish waters all year round. And we know that from fishing reports, strandings, and some divers have been fortunate enough to be surprised by a basking shark in the depths of winter. But we also know from tagging studies, I think in the UK there was sharks tagged here. One went the whole way across the Atlantic. It was something like 10,000 kilometers. And the other went down to the Mediterranean. So the two did totally different things, which doesn't help us answer the question, but it does give us a bit of an insight into the wider picture that these sharks are coming from different places to Scotland. So the waters here must be important for something. And same in Ireland as well. And we think the most likely thing is that these big plankton blooms here in the cold waters that we have bring sharks in to feed, and that might then lead to courtship because of the aggregations. But again, it's never been seen. So during the winter, they go into very deep water and follow continental shelves to different places. And we can only assume that they're feeding during that time as well at depth. They have a very, very large liver. So their liver is about one third of their body size, which was one of the reasons that they were targeted so heavily for hunting. But it's the thing that helps them survive through the winter when they're not feeding in very reproductive summer waters. So yeah, I don't know if that was my opinion. That was a few fragments of other people's research. But yeah, it's the whole picture is we don't know.
And so if anyone wants to see a basking shark, like we talked a little bit about the tours you did, but if you were to give advice to someone to go and see one, like how would they do it? How long do they need? You know, you said weather's a bit of an issue. Would you spend like a week where they are, or what would you do?
Yeah, so if you had the resources to spend as much time as you could, I would recommend giving it at least a week. The weather here can be tough, especially, you know, the Hebrides are right at the edge of the Atlantic, so they get very strong winds. And it's one of the amazing things about the islands. It shapes them. These remote wild places, incredible wildlife, but it's very challenging to run a boat there. You get very, very strong, unprotected seas. So you do have to be in it to win it. So the more time you spend on the water, the more chance you have of seeing them. The time of year as well, I think I mentioned before, July, August, especially August seems to be where we see the most sharks, and the location as well. So it can be a little bit like finding a needle in a haystack. So they could be miles offshore, or they can be right outside the harbour. It's really luck of the draw. So we've had days where we've had to search for hours and hours to come across a shark, and it's been feeding off like a big sea trench, like 2 hours off the coast. And then we've got up the next day and you can see them before you're even on the boat. So yeah, it isn't an easy undertaking to find a basking shark. But if you look from the Isle of Col, Tyree, and Skye, Mull, the small isles, then their hotspots are on the Hebrides. And then Ireland as well is a really great place to see them. In Achill Island was one of the old hunting stations pretty much in Ireland, and you can see them from the cliffs there, and I think Cork and County Mayo as well. But yeah, so they can be in very open water, but you can be lucky. They can be just off the coast if the tide's doing the right thing for you. And so yeah, it's luck of the draw, unfortunately, but you know, yeah, it's one of those things. You'll not see them unless you look.
And like, what kind of temperature are we talking about in the water? And, you know, like, do you have to be prepared for some pretty cold water, or?
Yeah, so I think it's just one of the reasons that basking sharks aren't as well known as the whale sharks, because it's quite pleasant jumping into 20-degree water in the tropics to look for a manta or a whale shark. But here you're jumping into the middle of the wild Atlantic in the summer, where it's probably never going to be warmer than 15 degrees. So you do have to be a little bit prepared for that, especially if you're not used to Scottish sea temperatures. And September is usually the warmest time of year for that. But the temperature at the moment's probably about 6. So I've not been in the sea much lately. But yeah, so it's all part of the adventure. You have to get very much wrapped up in neoprene. You'll forget very quickly how cold you are when a basking shark swims past you.
Yeah, when a 12-meter shark comes up to you, I imagine it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the times where your brain just forgets everything else.
Yeah. Have you had any, like, one really memorable encounter with a basking shark or something that really stood out?
Yeah, so there's been quite a few really special moments, and seeing them breach is really special. So they're the largest shark that can breach fully out of the water, and reaching the size that they do is pretty incredible to see one propel itself out of the water like that.
Why are they breaching? That's crazy. A 12-meter shark breaching. That is like Sharknado.
Yeah, right? It'd be surprised you to know that we don't know. One of the leading theories is that it's some sort of communication signal in between sharks. So one of the earlier theories was that it could be to try and shake those lampreys off. But because they're filter feeding and they're quite slow moving most of the time, it seems quite an unexpected thing to do, to just breach out of the water. So it all kind of comes back to this theory that they're here in some sort of courtship aggregation, and it could be a way to signal to other sharks that they are here in the area. We think it's the noise it makes, because they have been tagged and shown to do it both day and night. So it's not a visual cue. But yeah, that's, again, another thing that we're not quite sure about. But it all kind of leads to the same sort of answer, that we think that there's something going on in the water here. They actually put underwater cameras on some sharks and found them all aggregating on the seabed and in the Sea of the Hebrides and touching fins and kind of coming into this weird formation. And as technology does, the battery didn't last long enough to see what happened next. Still a mystery. So they're keeping their secrets quite well. But yeah, seeing them breach is really cool. One of those very unexpected things. It's not like when you're looking for whales and you can look for cues of what fish are doing, where they might pop up. It will just launch itself out of the water, and they can do a few breaches in quick succession as well, so it might then breach two or three times and then completely disappear.
Wow. I mean, I did a bit of research trying to find like facts and different things about basking sharks, but I never came across that, and I feel like that is the most amazing thing.
Yeah, yeah. So they are the largest shark and fish species to breach, so it's a pretty good record for them to have.
Yeah. Wow. Well, just before we kind of wrap up, we just have to mention as well, like, I know I came across you on Instagram, but just because of your amazing art, and you have all these cool drawings of basking sharks and other sharks, and do you draw off memory or off a photo, or like, tell us a little bit about your basking shark art.
Yeah, so at the minute I am working on a Hebridean wildlife collection. So the basking shark was a big part of that. That's one of the first pieces I did for that collection, and these are all from my photographs from spending time at sea here. There's also a puffin and seal I'm working on at the moment, and John Coe is quite a famous orca that we see here. He's part of it, and it's a project that I think is going to take me years, because there's so much to see here, and the wildlife is just incredible, and the islands are all so unique. So I really want to celebrate that, because, you know, it's, again, not one of those places that people might think of, but the marine life here is incredible, and it is on par with, you know, places that people travel across the world to see. So I really want to showcase it. So I do a bit of a mix of scientific illustration and other things. And so I'll be documenting all the different species. I'm working with Escape Project at the moment on looking at a flapper skate nursery. Flapper skates are pretty much the size of manta rays, but again, some people don't really know about. And so I really want to, you know, spread the word about all these amazing things we have, because people don't know that they're there, then you're not going to be interested enough to want to protect the waters. So it all kind of comes full circle back to that, really. That's a little bit about what I do now.
Yeah, kills me that right at the end of the episode you mentioned flapper skates that are the size of manta rays. Like, please tell us in 30 seconds what a flapper skate is.
So a flapper skate is a very, very large skate species. I think it's definitely the largest that we get in the UK, and we just don't really see them anytime. They are landed by fishermen. You're not allowed to keep them, so they have to be released. But they lay egg cases. So unlike mantas, who give birth to live young, flapper skates have egg cases, which are pretty much the size of an A4 piece of paper. So when they're wet and they come up on the shore, you see these huge, huge egg cases, which are just amazing. And unfortunately, they shrink as they dry up. But when we find those around Scotland, it tells you that there's flapper skates in the area. And so what we're trying to do is get more people out looking for them.
Wow, cool. Well, when you find out more about flapper skates and the research comes in, we're going to have to do a flapper skate episode.
Well, we can do that.
But yeah, before we go though, if anyone wants to see your amazing art and even like get in contact with you about basking sharks and all that kind of stuff, what should they do and where should they go?
Yeah, so you can find me at rachelbrooksart.com or rachelbrooksart on Instagram. Is the platform I mostly use, but you'll also find me if you search for Rachel Brooks Art on most things. So I'm also on the same thing, going on Facebook, YouTube, Threads. I unfortunately couldn't have Rachel Brooks Art on TikTok, but you'll still find me if you search for that. So it's rachel.brooks.art. Someone stole my name. But yeah, mostly Instagram and my website. You can contact me there. You can have a look at my artwork and see some basking shark footage if you've not yet imagined what they look like.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks very much for being on the show.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure chatting about basking sharks.
Sea Creatures Podcast is hosted, edited, and produced by myself, Matt Testoni. If you've liked the show, please subscribe, give us a review, and jump onto our Patreon account, which is patreon.com/seacreaturespodcast, or our Buy Me a Coffee account, where you can give a little donation to help with the monthly running costs of the show. Production assistance by George McGrath, and music by the talented Dan Musil. Also, a massive thank you to all our current supporters who are helping out with the show. Sea Creatures also has an Instagram, which is instagram.com/seacreatures_podcast. Coming up next time, it's episode 50, which is huge. So we're going to be doing something a little bit different, but you'll have to tune in then to find out. This has been the Sea Creatures Podcast. Over and out.